Bum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum ba da dum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum. Welcome to Everyday Musicality, the podcast in which we discuss all things related to Gordon's music learning theory and how it can help unlock the inner musician that lives inside of all of us. I'm your host, Heather Scholdeis, music educator and faculty member for the Gordon Institute for Music Learning. In this episode, we focus on bridging to the creativity improvisation level of inference learning from the verbal association level of the skill learning sequence. Hello and welcome to the Everyday Musicality Podcast. In today's episode, I'm continuing our mini-series of episodes on verbal association learning by talking about bridging from the verbal association skill level to the creativity improvisation level of inference learning. If you're newer to MLT and haven't already listened to the 5 or 6 episodes prior to this one, I suggest going back and listening to those first. In those episodes, I gave an introduction to the verbal association skill level, talked about various tonal, solfege, and rhythm syllable systems, focused on specific tonal and rhythm skills that can be learned at the verbal association level, and then discussed bridging from verbal association to generalization, which is the first level of inference learning. Now, let's get into bridging from verbal association to creativity improvisation, which is the second level of inference learning. At the creativity improvisation level, students use the audiation and skills they've developed by rote in discrimination learning to come up with their own musical material and express their own musical ideas. So you can tap into the tonal and rhythm skills that students developed at the verbal association level with a particular type of content by giving them opportunities to create or improvise with that content at the creativity improvisation skill level. Remember that we call this type of movement bridging when we temporarily jump from a discrimination level of learning to the corresponding sub-level at inference learning. In the previous episode, I talked about bridging from verbal association to the verbal sublevel of generalization. When we bridge from verbal association to generalization verbal, we ask students to figure out something unfamiliar using tonal solfege, rhythm syllables, and names of tonalities, meters, and functions as tools. When we bridge from verbal association to creativity improvisation, we ask students to create or improvise something using tonal solfege, rhythm syllables, or names of tonalities, meters, or functions as tools. That's it. Now, back in episode 37, I looked at the 3 main ways that students can engage with creativity improvisation at the aural-aural sublevel, which are rhythmic creating, tonal creating, and melodic creating. Now, let's look at how those same 3 strands, rhythm, tonal, and melodic, could be experienced when bridging to creativity improvisation from verbal association. First, let's look at rhythm. One of the main rhythm skills that students develop at the verbal association skill level is chanting familiar rhythm patterns with syllables. Once students have had sufficient experiences echoing familiar rhythm patterns with syllables, you could prompt them to create their own rhythm patterns with syllables. Back in episode 37, I talked about having students engage in rhythm conversations to get them creating rhythm patterns on neutral syllables. That same strategy also works great when bridging from verbal association by simply prompting students to apply syllables to the rhythm patterns they are creating. One activity I love for this is a variation of the chant, "My mother, your mother," that my friend Amy West came up with. It goes like this. Black cat and pink mouse live across the way. Every night they have a chat, and this is what they say. Now, you can change the lyrics to any kind of stuffed animal or puppet that you might have, but I use a black Beanie Baby cat and a pink Beanie Baby mouse. So first, I would perform the chant and model creating rhythm patterns with syllables, first with the black cat and then answering with the pink mouse a few times. Black cat and pink mouse live across the way. Every night they have a chat, and this is what they say. Do-day, do-ta-day-ta, do-day-do. Do-ta-day-ta, do-ta-day-ta, do-day-do. And I might model back and forth with the black cat chanting a pattern on syllables and the pink mouse answering back with a different pattern on syllables. And then I might ask the students, who always talked first? Black cat. And when pink mouse answered, did they say something same or different? Different. Now, here's where you can decide how much you want to explicitly guide students' responses. You could just say, let's see if you can pretend to be Pink Mouse and chant back a different pattern from mine with syllables. In this instance, you would be engaging the students in rhythmic creativity, because while you are providing a context, you aren't giving the students explicit external restrictions. So in this instance, students would be creating rhythmically. You could also do a similar activity, but explicitly point out the meter and prompt students to respond specifically in that meter. So you might say, Black Cat and Pink Mouse were chanting with do's and do days. So what meter were they chanting in? Duple meter. Now let's see if you can pretend to be Pink Mouse. I'll chant a rhythm with syllables in duple meter to you, and you'll answer back with a different rhythm in duple meter with syllables. In the MLT world, we often talk about exploration, creativity, and improvisation as existing along a continuum. So in this instance where you're explicitly asking students to come up with a rhythm in duple meter, you're moving a bit away from just creativity and moving toward improvisation, because specifying duple meter acts as a slight restriction. Either way of doing it is fine, specifying the meter for the students or not, but explicitly asking students to come up with a rhythm in a specific meter gets them more consciously focusing on the rhythmic context and the rhythms that they're creating within that context. So back to the Black Cat and Pink Mouse chant. Whichever way you do the rhythm conversation activity, whether you specify the meter for the students or you just chant patterns with syllables and ask students to do something different back to you, I would start by giving students a few times to respond to rhythms as a group. And then I would alternate between repetitions of the chant and tossing the Pink Mouse toy to a few individuals while chanting a pattern with syllables as Black Cat and having them chant back a different pattern with syllables as Pink Mouse. Here's a quick bit of what that might sound like.
Black Cat and Pink Mouse live across the way. Every night they have a chat and this is what they say.
Hey!
Do day, do day, do today, do.
Do-da-da, 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 do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da,
do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, do-da-da, I discussed Gordon's system of classifying rhythm pattern function back in episode 44. So if you're not sure what I mean by function of rhythm patterns, you might want to check out episode 44. I'll link to that in the show notes as well. So if students have learned to recognize and label rhythm pattern function at verbal association, like I talked about in episode 45, now you can use that language to give students an external restriction at creativity improvisation. You could say, remember when we learned about duple macrobeat microbeat patterns, or we called them MMs for short? Well, today, when we make Black Cat and Pink Mouse speak in rhythms, they're only going to chant duple MM patterns. This would be moving it to the improvisation end of the continuum, because by asking students to chant a specific function, you're giving them an explicit external restriction within which to work. In addition to the Black Cat and Pink Mouse activity, you could do rhythm pattern improvisation as a totally different activity. One that my students always enjoyed involved a stuffed M&M toy I found online somewhere. If you didn't have a toy, you could just cut a colored circle out of cardstock or a foam sheet from the craft store and just write an M on it like an M&M candy. In this activity, we would sing a familiar song while passing the M&M around the circle. Then whoever was holding the M&M at the end of the song would improvise an MM pattern, a macrobeat microbeat pattern, with syllables for the class to echo. The nice thing about this is that it does double duty. When the students get the M&M, they get to engage with improvising rhythms at the creativity improvisation level, but because they're also echoing all the rhythms that each individual is improvising, the class also gets more experience with verbal association, so that's a nice bonus. Of course, there are many other ways of engaging students with creativity, improvisation, rhythm, using verbal association as a tool, which I describe in my book, Weaving It All Together, A Practical Guide to Applying Gordon's Music Learning Theory in the Elementary General Music Program, which is published by sponsor GIA Publications. I'll link to that in the show notes in case you're interested. One quick note about creating or improvising with syllables. When you ask students to create or improvise rhythm patterns with syllables, it's likely that some students won't apply the correct syllables to the rhythms they chant. When this happens, I typically use Gordon's suggestion of simply chanting their pattern back with the correct syllables and moving on. I also like to encourage students to move to macro beats and micro beats while they're chanting and improvising because it provides a physical anchor for those syllables. Also, one thing to keep in mind is that when you bridge from a level of discrimination learning to a level of inference learning, you as the teacher need to decide how much accuracy you'll expect in order to deem a student's response successful. Remember that students will never have as much success when bridging to inference learning as they would when approaching it through stepwise movement. And that's okay. You as the teacher just need to keep that in mind and not expect it to be perfect. Now, if you ask students to create or improvise with syllables, and many of them are struggling to apply the correct syllables, they would probably benefit from some additional experience with associating syllables to given patterns at generalization verbal, which I talked about in the previous episode, episode 47. When we ask students to create or improvise patterns with syllables, they're actually performing two skills, coming up with the rhythm and applying syllables to that rhythm. So giving students experiences with applying syllables to patterns given on neutral syllables provides them with readiness for the second part of that process. If the majority of students are struggling to create or improvise with accurate syllables, you might try giving them additional experiences with creating patterns on neutral syllables as well. Or you might just decide they need more verbal association learning experiences. Next, let's look at bridging from verbal association to creativity improvisation with the tonal dimension. One of the main tonal skills that students develop at the verbal association skill level is singing familiar tonal patterns with solfege. So once students have had sufficient experiences echoing familiar tonal patterns with solfege, you could prompt them to create their own tonal patterns with solfege. Back in episode 37, I gave a number of examples for having students create tonal patterns on neutral syllables, and all of those could work when bridging from verbal association. You would just model patterns on tonal solfege and prompt students to respond with patterns on tonal solfege. Just like with rhythm, you can do this in several ways. You could simply point out to students that you were using solfege and ask them to sing back a different tonal pattern with solfege, any pattern at all, and that would be the creativity end of the continuum. Or you could label the familiar tonality and ask students to respond with a pattern on solfege in that tonality. So that would be moving a bit away from creativity and toward improvisation. Or you could restrict their improvisation by harmonic function. For example, you might tell students that you are going to sing either a major tonic or major dominant pattern with solfege, and their job is to sing back a different pattern of the same function with solfege. So if you sing a major tonic, they sing a different major tonic. If you sing a major dominant, they sing a different major dominant. In this instance, you would be more at the improvisation end of the continuum because you're giving an explicit external restriction. Here's a quick example of what that might sound like the first time you do it with students.
So do me. So.
Now that was messy, and that's okay. That was audio from a video of second graders trying that for the first time. I'll link to that video in the show notes in case you'd like to watch it. This is challenging because the students have to first identify the function of the pattern that the teacher is singing and then come up with their own pattern of the same function and apply the proper solfège syllables. That's a lot. I like to start first by having students only improvise patterns of a certain function. We might do a classroom activity with a song in major tonality, and we might play a game where the student's job is to improvise only major tonic patterns. For example, I have this toy called Morphing Marty. It's a stuffed puppet with facial features all attached with Velcro that can stick on the fabric on the head of the puppet. I'll model improvising major tonic patterns each time I stick a piece on Morphing Marty, leading students to realizing what I was doing. Then I'll say, I'm going to pass out pieces as we sing the song, and then I'll bring Morphing Marty around to the people who have the pieces. When I come to you, your job is to improvise a major tonic pattern and then stick your piece on Morphing Marty. I don't think that puppet's being sold anymore, but you could use a toy like Mr. Potato Head, anything that has movable parts that could be taken off and put back on. Now, just like with rhythm patterns, when you ask students to create or improvise tonal patterns with syllables, it's likely that some students won't apply the correct syllables to the pitches they sing. And again, when that happens, Gordon suggests the teacher immediately sings the pattern with the correct syllables and moves on to another student. Another strategy I find helpful is to ask the student if, for example, they sang do, mi, so. I might say to the student, did you mean so, mi, do? Or did you mean do, mi, so? Some students, particularly those struggling with tonal audiation, may begin by choosing the syllables first, rather than audiating the pitches and then applying the syllables. So I find it helpful to model both strategies for the students. And also, just like with rhythm, don't expect it to be perfect when bridging to creativity improvisation. It's okay for there to be mistakes, just like in that video that you heard the audio from. If you notice that many students are struggling to associate the proper solfège to their patterns, you might give them some additional experience with applying solfège to given patterns on neutral syllables, which I talked about in the previous episode on generalization. If students are struggling to create or improvise with accurate pitch, they might benefit from additional experiences with creating patterns on neutral syllables, which I talked about back in episode 37. We've talked about creativity improvisation with rhythm and with tonal. Finally, you could also engage students in creating melodically by having them create in both the tonal and rhythm improvisations at the same time. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that students are performing on syllables. In fact, Gordon advised that syllables not be used when combining the tonal and rhythm dimensions. So in other words, he advised that rhythm syllables should not be sung, only chanted, and that tonal solfège should not be sung in rhythm. So when bridging from verbal association and having students improvise melodically, it's more often by using tonality, meter, and function names as tools. Back in episode 37, I talked about ideas for doing melodic creating with students, like modeling question and answer phrases in a particular tonality and meter on neutral syllables, and then asking them to sing an answer phrase to your question phrase. This is an example of melodic creativity because you would not be explicitly giving a restriction. Yes, you're setting up a tonal and metric context, but it's totally up to the students whether or not they respond in that context. In other words, when they create within that implicit context, they're imposing restrictions on themselves using their audiation by sensing that tonal and metric context and coming up with something that fits, hopefully. If we do melodic improvising, we're giving some sort of explicit external restriction. So we might set up the question and answer phrase activity, and maybe we start by asking them to generalize and identify the tonality or meter. Let's try that. Ya-dum, ba-da-da-da-dum, bum, ba-da-da-da-dum, bum, ba-da-dum, bum. This time when I sing my question and answer phrases, see if you can tell what meter I'm singing in. Is it duple? Do-day, do-day. Triple? Do-da-dee, do-da-dee. Or something else. You figure out the meter. Ya-da-da-da-dum, bum, ba-da-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-dum. Do, day, do, day. It was duple-meter. Now let's see if you can tell which tonality I'm singing in. Is it major? Sol, la, sol, fa, mi, re, ti, do. Minor? Mi, fa, mi, re, do, ti, si, la. Or something else. Do, ti, si, la. It was minor. This time, I'm going to sing some question phrases in minor tonality and duple meter, and your job is to audiate back something as an answer in minor tonality and duple meter. Let's try it. Ya, da, 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 da. Ya-dum, ba-da-da-da-dum-bum. Now let's see if you can sing some answer phrases in minor tonality and duple meter out loud. I'll sing my question phrase in minor and duple, and you sing back an answer in minor and duple. Ya-da-da-da-da. Ya da 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 da. Ba dum ba dum ba da dum bum. That would be an example of moving just a bit away from pure creating and toward improvisation, because you're giving a slight explicit external restriction of tonality and meter. Also, just a note, you wouldn't have to start with asking students to generalize by identifying the tonality and meter. You could just tell them the answer. I just wanted to throw that in there for a bit more of a challenge for you by bridging to generalization before we did the creativity improvisation. We could even move further toward the improvisation end of the continuum with melodic improvisation by using a chord progression as a restriction. I like to do this by using a chord progression to a familiar song that the students already know how to sing. First, we would start by reviewing the melody and the chord roots. What shall we do when we all go out? All go out, all go out. What shall we do when we all go out? When we all go out to play. Now let's try the chord roots. Do, do, so, do, 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 so, do. This time, we're going to take the solfege away and we're just going to sing those chord roots on. Bum, 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 bum. And we're going to try adding some rhythms to those chord roots to make them a little more interesting. You can sing any rhythms you want on bum to those chord roots. I'll model it for you and then you can give it a try. Bum 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 ba ba bum bum ba 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 bum ba 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 bum. You try it. Bum 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 ba bum ba bum 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 bum. Let's give you a chance to try that on your own. Now that song is in duple meter because the microbeats are do day, do day, do day, do day. Remember back when we learned about macrobeat, microbeat patterns in duple meter? Those are the patterns that only use do and do day. Let's try improvising a few. I'm going to make up a duple MM pattern. You answer back with a different duple MM pattern. Here we go. Do day, do, do day, do. Do, do, do day, do day. Now, what if this time we improvised our duple MM patterns, but instead of saying them on do's and do days, we're going to think the do's and do days in our heads and only chant them out loud on ba. Let's give it a try. Ba, 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 ba. Ba, 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 ba ba. Were you still making sure you only use do's and do days, even though you didn't say that part out loud? Okay, because this time we're going to add it to our chord roots of our song. We're still going to sing our chord roots on bum, 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 bum. But in our audiation, we're going to add do's and do days, and we're going to improvise on those chord roots using MM rhythm patterns. I'll show you how to do it once, and then it will be your turn to try improvising some MM patterns on those chord roots. Bum 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 bum. Now you try making up MM patterns. Now, you might notice that that experience was different from when you could just open your mouth and sing any rhythm that you wanted. You really had to think in a different way about the rhythms that you were coming up with. And that's the benefit, I think, of teaching students the language of rhythm pattern function, to recognize rhythm pattern function. Then you can use it as a restriction when you do improvisation, and it gets students thinking in a totally different way than when they can just open their mouth and sing whatever rhythms they feel like it. Not to say that that's not valuable, of course, it totally is, but being able to use function as a restriction takes their thinking to another level. Next, I might go through the process of having students sing the chord tones in three parts. So instead of just singing chord roots on do and so, I would model singing the progression on do and ti like this. Do, do, ti, do, and teach that to the students. Then I would model a second part on the pitches mi and fa, like this. Mi, mi, fa, mi, and teach that second part to the students. And then I would model a third part on just so and so, and have the students try that part after I modeled it. Next, we would sing those three chord tone parts in three groups. And then we could have students try creating or improvising rhythms on their chord tone part. So each of the three groups in the class are singing one of those three separate parts, and then they add in making up their own rhythms. Of course, taking the solfege away, once they've got their part going, you just have them sing their three parts on bum so they can improvise rhythms without having to mess with solfege. If you're not sure exactly how this three-part chord tone business would go or how it would sound, I modeled that process for three-part chord tones back in episode 21, which I'll link to in the show notes. I'll also likely model it again in the next episode because I think I'm going to talk more about harmony in the next episode. So going back to improvisation, after students had experienced the three-part chord tones, I would then lead them to realizing that when I was holding up one finger, the three groups were singing do and mi and so that was a major tonic chord. And then when I held up five fingers, the groups were singing ti, fa, and so, which were pitches from a major dominant chord. I even might model singing and having the students try singing those chord names on the chord roots to the progression, like this. Tonic, tonic, dominant, tonic. So they're starting to connect the language of the chord names to their audiation of the chord functions. After we had named the chords in the progression, we might move to arpeggiating those chords to macro beats. I might tell the students, this time we're going to sing macro beats and we can choose any pitches we want from those tonic and dominant chords to sing on our macro beats. I'll model and then you try it. Bum, 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 bum. Try choosing chord tones to macro beats. Next, let's try the same idea, but instead of singing chord tones on macro beats, let's try it on micro beats. You can change pitches within the function anytime you want, but we're only going to do it to do-day, do-day, like this. Bum, 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 bum. Now you try microbeats. Next, let's mix up macro beats and micro beats. This time you can sing any pitches from the tonic and dominant chords that you want, but only to the rhythms do, do, and do day, do day. I'll go first and then you try it. Bum, 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 bum. Now you try macros and micros. Now for the really fun part. This time we're going to sing any rhythms we want to in duplometer, and we can add in extra pitches besides just the major tonic and dominant chord tones. So basically, we're going to make up any new song that we want that fits with our tonic and dominant progression. I'll go first, and then it's your turn. Ba-da-dum, bum, 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 bum. Ba-da-dum, bum, 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 bum. Ba-da-dum, bum, ba-da-dum, bum, ba-da-da-dum, bum, bum. Now you try making up any song you want. Just a quick word of warning, you may not want to do all those steps in a single class period. Maybe you start with improvising rhythms on the chord roots and then come back another day and choose chord tones to the macro beats or micro beats, and so on. It all depends on what your students are ready for. I also want to acknowledge that the process I just took you through for melodic improvisation with the chord progression for What Shall We Do When We All Go Out, that process is based on Dick Gruno and Chris Azera's 7 Steps for Improvisation. They share this in their series, Developing Musicianship Through Improvisation. This is a series designed to help build audiation and musicianship through a step-by-step process that leads to improvisation. Each volume includes a book and recordings with a set of tunes. For each tune, there's a series of steps to help you build musicianship skills and audio tracks to practice those skills. So you learn the tune, you learn the chord roots, you echo tonal patterns and rhythm patterns in the context of the tune, first on neutral syllables, then with solfege. Then the book and recordings guide you to start improvising over the chord progression of the tune, similar to what I just talked you through with improvising over What Shall We Do When We All Go Out. So if you're wanting to get more comfortable improvising through audiation, I highly recommend the Developing Musicianship Through Improvisation series. Also, if you're an instrumentalist, there are different versions that are specific to certain instruments. So for example, if you're a clarinetist or a trumpeter, you can get the version for B-flat instruments, and so on. I'll link to those resources, Developing Musicianship Through Improvisation, in the show notes. So those are some examples of how you can bridge from the verbal association skill level to the creativity improvisation level of inference learning. Speaking of inference learning, a quick note. In the previous episode, when talking about bridging to the generalization level, I differentiated between discrimination learning and inference learning by saying that in discrimination learning, students deal with familiar material, and in inference learning, they deal with unfamiliar material. Now, this is not untrue. However, Andy Mullen, a new Gimmel faculty member, reached out to me after listening to the episode to say, one point of clarification, you make the statement that in inference learning the material is unfamiliar. Shouldn't it be the material is familiar and unfamiliar? And Andy is right. We don't have students only deal with unfamiliar material at inference learning because they wouldn't have any foundation to make inferences from. For example, if we were bridging from verbal association to generalization by singing an unfamiliar song and asking students to identify the tonality independently, we wouldn't choose a song in a tonality they had never learned to label before at verbal association. They would have no way of figuring out the answer because they would have nothing familiar to infer from. Instead, if students had learned to label major and minor tonalities at verbal association, we would choose an unfamiliar song and one of those familiar tonalities for them to identify. Now, I should mention, maybe you're sneaky like me, and when your students get a little too big for their britches, thinking that they know everything, maybe you tell them to figure out whether it's major or minor, and then you do sing a song in Dorian or Phrygian just to mess with them. But in this case, I wouldn't expect students to actually be able to label the tonality as Dorian or Phrygian if they had never learned to label those tonalities at verbal association. In this case, I would just be throwing them a curveball to make them realize they don't know everything yet. It's kind of like those super advanced patterns in Rhythm Unit 5 of learning sequence activities, the ones that have those 30-second notes thrown in there. You're not expecting students to be able to chant those syllables correctly because they would have never heard syllables for divisions of divisions at that point. Gordon put those patterns in there just to mess with any high-aptitude students who are able to do everything up until that point, and it stops them in their tracks and makes them go, whoa. But back to Andy's point, yes, when we're engaging students in inference learning, there should be a mix of familiar and unfamiliar material. And the goal is for students to figure out the unfamiliar based on the familiar material they've experienced in discrimination learning. Thanks to Andy for pointing that out. I just hadn't wanted to get too in the weeds for fear of turning off anyone who's newer to MLT. That's sort of the line we always walk as advocates for MLT, right? There's so much to it, so much nuance, but if we try to get into everything right away, it can really be a turnoff for newbies. So far in this podcast, I've been trying to keep everything as approachable as I can for folks who are newer to MLT. But this also makes me realize that I do need to occasionally get into some deeper dives for hardcore MLT nerds. If you consider yourself a hardcore MLT nerd and you have a suggestion for a topic you would love to hear a deep dive about, please email me your idea at everydaymusicality@gmail.com. And that goes for everyone. I want this podcast to be really useful and relevant to your needs as an MLT practitioner, newer or veteran. So if you have any ideas for what you'd love to hear about on this show, please send them my way. Also, I'm still hoping to do that listener suggestion episode I've been mentioning throughout the mini-series on Aural Aural and the mini-series on verbal association. I've gotten some really great activity ideas from listeners that I'm excited to share, but I would love a few more. If you have a favorite activity for teaching any skills at the Aural Aural or verbal association level, anything for teaching macrobeat or microbeat, or resting tone, or singing or chanting patterns, or labeling functions, maybe it's a fun prop, or manipulative, or a game your students love, please email me a short description, or better yet, record a voice memo of yourself describing it, and email that to me so listeners can hear your voice. They're probably all getting sick of me and would love to hear from someone new. In the meantime, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please get in touch. You can email me or send me a voice memo at everydaymusicality@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and let's keep musicking every day.